The NAFTA podcast.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
NAFTA podcast, we're back. We are running through some of these team previews, and we are fortunate enough to have Stephen Ord of the True Faith Newcastle United podcast on with us today. Excited to talk to him about Newcastle, obviously a team that got a lot of prominence here in the U.S., got a lot more followers last year in the U.S. based on how they were playing, and excited for him to tell us about this season coming up and a little bit of background. Stephen, welcome to the NAFTA podcast.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. Appreciate it. It's always nice to speak to people about Newcastle United.
Yeah, we've done a few of these now. I think we did Crystal Palace, Bournemouth, Wolves, and then the first one was Man City, which I am a fan of, and you can save your comments for that later. But everyone is really excited and loves the opportunity to talk about their team, especially when it's this early in the year. And for you all, coming off of a big first match week win. So that's actually where we always start this. How did you become a fan of Newcastle? Where did that start? And I kind of told you before we started recording, it can be as easy as you were born into it. I know here in the US, we don't have that luxury, like I mentioned before, but how did you become a fan? And then obviously if you're creating any type of content for something, you tend to like it even more than a normal person. How did that start too?
Yeah. My first match was in late August 1989. So that's coming up to 34 years ago now. I was taken by my dad. And he'd been a Newcastle season ticket holder for about 12, 13 years. And I think he was kind of forced by my mother to take one of his two boys along with him to the football to help her out on a Saturday afternoon. And so that was it. I was taken to St. James's Park when I was 5. And I fell in love with it, the green of the grass, the atmosphere at the ground. I've been fortunate enough to take my own son to a number of games over the past 5 years. And yeah, I was born here. And I do think that probably does help. But at the same time, it was the fact that I got to go to games and the fact that I got to watch and see players, have heroes. My favourite ever Newcastle player was a guy we signed when I was 8. Guy called Robert Lee, probably not very famous anywhere else in the world, but to Newcastle fans, he's our Kevin De Bruyne. You know, we signed him for £700,000 from Charlton, and he went from being a Division One player or a Championship player to being an England international and scoring on his England debut. So it was a fantastic steps for him to take, and I suppose the Kevin Keegan team. For older listeners to your podcast, maybe. If not, go on YouTube, look it up. We were brilliant. 1995, 96, we finished second in the league when we should have won it. We were 12 points clear of Manchester United. They had one game in hand. And then the following season, we beat Manchester United 5-0 at home, beat Barcelona the season after that, 3-2 at home in the Champions League. So we were a really good team for a long period of time. And the hope is that we're coming back to that stage now.
Yeah,
But it's a fantastic team to watch and be supportive. I suppose if I was to say one thing, and I know we'll probably get onto it a bit more later, but it's a one club city.
Yeah.
So, you know, very much like in the United States where, you know, there's one basketball team in Detroit or there's one American football team in I'm using just Detroit as an example. Sorry, people who don't like Detroit. You know, like I'm a Phoenix Suns basketball fan and have been since Steve Nash and myself. But again, that's a one. You know, it's a one club. And so the knock-on impact of that is that if you are born here and you're around here, really had two options. Yeah, support Newcastle, I support Sunderland. If I'm honest, in the last 5-10 years, you saw lots of people in Newcastle wearing Manchester City shirts, wearing Liverpool shirts, because Newcastle were rubbish. And kids don't want to watch football teams who are rubbish. So now it's quite nice to see the return of black and white stripes to the streets of Newcastle.
Yeah, I think that what really enchanted me as someone who grew up in Ohio, and my brother as well, who does this podcast with me, is the fact that you almost have teams that represent honestly, like neighborhoods, even teams that represent small sects of people. And I think that why that like intrigued us is, and this will be like the fifth time I've mentioned this on some of these preview pods, is, you know, we're Cleveland fans. So that's a small town. It's a town that's beaten down. It's a town that's an underdog. And I think that we really gravitated towards the fact that the entire culture of football in the UK is based on really small areas of people that, like, you can, like, the first time I went over there, I walked to Chelsea and I walked to Fulham, and just coming up on the Fulham stadium, where I was like, this is in a cul-de-sac. Like, this is in a neighborhood. This is not anything that I'm used to as an American. I think was really intriguing to me. I know we're going to get to this at the end, like I said, for the pitch. And I know this is probably going to be a big part of the pitch, but one of the things that I know about Newcastle, and honestly, there isn't much, so that's why I was excited to talk to you. But one of the things I know is, here in the US, if you ask any American fan what the best fan culture is, they probably say Liverpool. And then the second team that is quick behind that, at least growing over the past couple of years, is Newcastle. Can you talk about what a game is like at St. James Park, why it is so different than any other club or any London club that we may know?
Yeah, so I suppose, again, I'm going to kind of float back towards what the situation kind of was previously. And when I was 11 or 12, we went to football grounds wondering how many goals we were going to score against the opposition because we were that good. So you went in, the noise was incredible. And that was when the stadium only held 36,000 people. I know quite a lot of people have been out in the States to watch us play in Philadelphia, Atlanta, when we played against Chelsea, I think it was in Atlanta. You know, people were saying, like, this is the future. Like, Newcastle needs a 90,000 seater stadium. if you were to come to the center of Newcastle, if you arrive by train, if you arrive by car, if you arrive by plane, you can see the football ground in the city center. Arsene Wenger said it was one of the greatest sights that he thought he could see in a city that was about St. James's Park. Was he called it, you know, we call it the Cathedral on the Hill, but, you know, there's more people flocking to St. James's Park than going to church. I think the culture very much is, it's still a working class football club. That's not to say that, like most Premier League clubs, it hasn't had to buy into corporate areas, and that the vast majority of what would be historically working class people are probably now priced out of going to games. But the fan culture is, it's just against them, really. There's nothing more vitriolic than a Newcastle fan base that believes it's been slighted, be it by a refereeing decision or a player who's given something. But the flags, the tifos that we've got through war flags. If people saw the game against Aston Villa, my stand, the East Stand, was covered in like an 1892 mural with flags and things like that. Going to the game now is a day out. It's a proper it's a proper experience. It didn't used to be. I'll be honest with you. You know, 3 or 4 years ago when I went with my friends, it was more, can we have a few beers beforehand and a few beers after? And the football was kind of, will anyone notice if we're not there? Whereas now, the football is the big thing to go to. And that's not me being a glory hunter or whatever you want to, it's just because of the fact that when you're a fan and, you know, you've invested so much money in the football club and you don't see it going anywhere, it's really, really difficult to do it. That's not the case now. Everybody is going to the game wanting Newcastle United to win. And, you know, I think if the last 5 minutes of the Carabao Cup final at Wembley last year, Man United fans were just singing about winning. Can't remember, but they're of no interest to me. But we were waving our flags, black and white flags, where everyone was waving them. It was like, you know what, we're here, we want to be seen. We want people to remember Newcastle United, we're here. And because we are kind of, we're treated like a provincial little club, I suppose a bit like Cleveland. For a period of time, you know, when LeBron James left and went to Miami, you know, the Cavaliers weren't treated as like, oh, they're a decent team. They were seen as like, oh, they're finished. Forget about them. LeBron's gone.
But we're getting that draft.
We had our hometown hero. We had Alan Shearer. And in 2006, when he left, and then 3 years later, he was the manager when we got relegated. You know, there's a massive drawback from that of like, oh, you know, like, where do we go from here? And the club has rallied round a group of people who seem to, and I don't know them personally, so I can't, seem to have the best interests of the football club at heart. but also are quite happy and content to tell us that they want to make us the number one team in the country, in the world, in Europe, whatever. And at the moment, the buzz is just excitement. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know if it's gone live with you guys yet, but Amazon Prime have done a documentary about This Is Newcastle United, about last season. It's 4 episodes, and the first one dropped in the UK on Friday at midnight.
Okay,
and I've been away, so I've only just got a chance to watch it the other day. But that's Amanda Staveley says the reason they bought the club is she came and watched us play against Liverpool, and she was blown away by the atmosphere and said, like, this is the football club you need to sign, because it's incredible what the noise is. They'd already tried to buy Liverpool and they hadn't been successful, so they decided to buy Newcastle. The difference, I suppose, with Anfield is Anfield's got a lot of history. The Kop, like, is renowned across the world, and Liverpool are, alongside Manchester United, Liverpool and Manchester United, the two most famous football clubs in England historically.
Mm.
But when you go to actually watch the games or go to those stadiums, Old Trafford's very, very quiet. Manchester United score, there's a bit of noise, and then it stops. Liverpool's a little bit different in that Liverpool still has kept some of its kind of raucous, raw atmosphere. But even people who I've been going to matches with for quite a few years now would say that that is changing again, that because Liverpool are becoming a bit like Newcastle potentially will in the future, but like Manchester City probably have done over the past 10 years, because they've taken on a different group of supporters, that maybe at different times the atmosphere changes. Newcastle is really lucky at this stage, and that hasn't happened at all, and you couldn't at any point fault, I don't think, the atmosphere at any games at St. James's Park at the moment.
Yeah, it's I didn't get to give you this background either. I said I was a City fan, my brother being a Liverpool fan. And then we have two other brothers, Dylan and Nick. Dylan's a Wolves fan, which is our unique little twist, because Nick himself is a Man United fan. And it's really funny. I've jumped on, like I said, a few different ones of these. And the general consensus is there is always a comment that I know is going to annoy Nick about being a Man United fan on here. But with that said, we did go to Philly. We went to all three games in Philly, and we walked away being really impressed with, obviously, the Newcastle fans, and then also we sat next to the Villa fans. They're the only two sections for those six teams that stood up the entire time, that cheered the entire time in Philly. Now, it could have been a mix of your typical Philly fan who's a little bit, you know, over dramatic, but we like to think that those two fan groups were just like heads and shoulders above everyone else. I think you mentioned before, you know, when you were growing up, like, winning was inevitable, scoring a lot of goals. It was when Newcastle was flying. And now you find yourself this season back in the Champions League. You said you played Barcelona. Now you're going to be back in that same competition where you get to play the continental greats and continental teams. I know that has to be one of the things that you're most excited about, is getting back out there on that stage. But what else about this team and about the direction that they're going, you know, excites you the most about Newcastle?
The Champions League is really exciting, because the last time we were in it, in 2002, 2003, we got to what was then the second group stage, which was the last 16. And we beat Bayer Leverkusen home and away, drew in Inter Milan, the San Siro, in the second group stage, and went into the Barcelona final group game knowing that if we beat Barcelona, we'd have a chance to come through. Now, we didn't beat Barcelona, but in that run, we became the first team to lose the first three group games and still qualify, because we won three group games in a row to qualify from the first group stage. I think it's really important that we also stress that this has come probably a year earlier than the owners expected it to. We are way ahead of schedule. Having said that, I was never expecting to be at a stage where I could say we've just bought a £60 million central midfielder from AC Milan and put him straight into our team, and he scores 6 minutes into his debut. It's a really positive step. I think it's something that I'm really excited about, the togetherness of this team, but also to see it grow. We were hanging on by our fingernails at a point last season to kind of positions. You know, Bruno Guimaraes got suspended for 3 games for sending off in the League Cup semi-final second leg. It meant we went on a bit of a run. We lost to Liverpool 2-0. We went to Manchester City and we were beaten. we gave a bit of a better account of ourselves than we normally do at the Etihad, but we were beaten. And obviously, you know, it's going to be, I suppose the biggest thing I'm excited for is what's next. It's not a battle against relegation. So we've started the season like we finished last. You know, we were all told that this was a really difficult start for Newcastle. Well, they've gone out and beaten Aston Villa 5-1. Obviously, we've got Manchester City away and Liverpool at home next. Well, who couldn't be excited by that? You're playing two of the top seven, top eight biggest teams in the country. You're playing probably the best club side in the world in Manchester City. And let's see how we go. They looked very good against Burnley. I'm sure, John, you're confident in a victory at home in the first game back at home this season. But we're also saying, you know, if we were to go to the Etihad and get a draw, the atmosphere going into the Liverpool home game, all of a sudden, as well, hold on, this was supposed to be a tricky start and we've got 4 points out of six. You know, can we go and beat Liverpool and make it 7 out of 9? And that is the excitement, because I think we've beaten Manchester United. We nearly beat Manchester City. It was a 3-3 draw. We've beaten Chelsea, and we've started to mix it with the big boys, and we're starting to flex our muscles a little bit. And this is just the start of the journey. And that's probably the most exciting bit about everything is, if you come back to me in 5 years' time, I'll hopefully be able to turn around and tell you, well, we went on to do this, we won this, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And at the moment, we're just on the upward plane, and hopefully it's going to continue. If I'm honest about one more thing that I'm really excited about, is I'm excited to actually see what our team looks like in 3 months' time. Harvey Barnes was a later addition. Tino Livramento has been a later addition. He's probably cover for Kieran Trippier. There's a rumour that we're going to go in for a left back now before the end of the window, possibly Kieran Tierney from Arsenal or Lewis Hall from Chelsea. So those kind of things make you really excited, because actually, well, this team looks good now, but it might get even better and get even better again. So that's the big excitement at the moment. But obviously, if you tell me now that we're going to go to the Nou Camp and beat Barcelona, I'm just going to start getting excited about things like that.
Yeah, that's I can't imagine that has to be so exciting to be back in that competition. I think you kind of took my thunder too. We did our season preview as a pod, came out last week, and the one thing that I mentioned was Tonali. I think that, again, you hit it right on the head. We said last year that you're exceeding expectations, you're a year ahead. And in some of those games, like me being a City fan, my brother being a Liverpool fan, you could have easily flipped the coin and, you know, you beat Liverpool that day, or at least you draw, or that City game was a basketball game. It truly was. It was back and forth. And I think that it showed that not only is the quality there, but I think that there is a little bit of an edge for Newcastle where you play up to the competition. And you can certainly probably tell me there's times when you were traveling to Southampton last year and you're like, this stunk. We played down to it. But for those couple of games, it was great to see them get up for it. You mentioned Tonali. I mentioned Tonali, but you also said Harvey Barnes and Livramento. I think it's really great that they're two Premier League proven players that have had impacts on teams. How do you feel about the business this year? And I will preface it that Alan St. Maximin was a pod favorite here. It was someone we love talking about and love bringing up. But just in general, the ins and the outs of the transfer window so far, how do you feel, you know, that, what is it, your third transfer window or second transfer window with the new ownership? How have they made those impacts felt?
Yeah, so it's actually transfer window number 4 for the new owners.
Okay.
Because they got the January transfer window just after they'd taken over. I'll be honest and say I was not a massive Alan St. Maximin fan. he was possibly one of the most frustrating footballers I've ever seen.
I can see that too. I can definitely see that.
he spent a lot of time adjusting his Gucci headband rather than actually tracking a defender who might be running towards our goal with the ball. But he was a split opinion. He was Marmite. You know, he did some things that for 2 years basically kept us in the league. So it was really difficult. He clearly wasn't an Eddie Howe player. If we look at the business, we allegedly got £30 million from him, which is the same as Mahrez got for Manchester City got for Mahrez. That, to me, is a much worse deal for Manchester City than it is for us. He was a player, I think, who had to move on, and the time was right for him to move on. And we've replaced him with Harvey Barnes for £35 million, allegedly. and he's got a goal, and he could have had two assists. He got one. He could have had two assists on Saturday. So I think we've got to be quite excited about what he could become. Livramento, it's going to be really difficult. He looked absolutely brilliant at Southampton in his debut season, tore his ACL, missed, I think it was 90% of last season. Hasn't been available for us in pre-season because we didn't sign him until much later in the window. So I think he'll probably take some time to get some game time. I don't think he'll be someone who comes straight into the team. Generally, I'm really happy with our business. We've moved out some people who weren't going to play. You know, Jamal Lewis has gone out on loan. We've moved out people who probably weren't going to be first team players. There's still some work to be done on that. I believe Ryan Fraser is either leaving today or tomorrow to go to Celtic. He'd fallen out with Howe and was being made to train with the under 23s because he was apparently being a bad influence around the dressing room. I would like us to buy a left back, and that's no disrespect to Dan Byrne, who is from Blythe, just up the road from me here. but it's actually because he's not a natural left back. He's a left-sided centre half, and he's been asked to play left back, and he's done a very good job of it. But when you come up against the best teams in Europe, you want to have an actual left back playing left back.
That's true.
And if I'm,
I think that left back is something that we identified as a position here. But I know that, you know, my brother will always bring up that Guimaraes is another player that we love. But having some support there, and me myself having to see Rodri play the entirety of last season with no help from Calvin Phillips at the time, how hard that was on him. Is that also an area you think that, hey, even if we get someone who's a professional that has been in the UK, is that a good pickup as well?
I mean, in a dream scenario, we'd get a left back, a right sided centre back, and another midfield player. I think the reality is we'll probably get one of those three, probably a left back. And I would love to say that we'd be able to rotate Bruno, but one of the good things that we've got now is now we've got Tonali, who can do pretty much everything. It's a little bit easier to say, right, Sean Longstaff can come back in and he can play the Tonali role this week, but Tonali can play Bruno's, or Joe Willock can come in and he can play those roles, or Joe Linton can move around. So we've got a position with midfield where we've probably got six players who could play every week. Now, is there a drop-off in quality from Tonali to Sean Longstaff? Yeah, there is. Is there a drop-off in quality from Bruno to people? Yeah. At the moment, I don't think we're seeing the best of Bruno. I think he's probably playing at 75-80% of his capability. He seems to have had a lot of games where he's been double-teamed by teams and he hasn't yet found a way to work out how to get out of that situation. But on Saturday, some of his passing, like one-touch passing with Tonali, with Joe Linton, with Trippier, that they knew where each other was, that gives me real strength going forward that we'll be all right in the Champions League. What that might mean is that he can't play 60 games a season. So, you know, if he plays 20, I mean, Rodri's a good example that you've used. You know, Calvin Phillips, is he going to be the classic Manchester City player who in his first season under Guardiola doesn't play at all and then all of a sudden looks really, really good in his second season?
Yeah.
I'm not too sure. I think there's obviously an issue between Phillips and Guardiola of some variety because Guardiola's called them out two or three times in the press. Having said that, he was having a go at Haaland as they walked off the field at half-time against Burnley and shoved a camera out of his face and then continued to have a go at Haaland, which... fair play to you. If you can have a go at a bloke who scored you 50 goals last season and tell you that he's already got one, he's not doing enough, then I suppose that's different gravy. I'd be very surprised if the midfield changes too much. If I'm honest, I think the biggest change for Newcastle is going to be that Isak will now be the starting centre forward and Callum Wilson's going to be coming off the bench in most games.
Okay.
And that to me is a brilliant sign because I think Alexander Isak is... Well, Harry Kane's left now, so I think Isak is the second best centre forward in the league at the moment.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's actually, you can tell you're professional and you've done this before. We wrote in some questions, and knowing that Wilson was there before and Isak, honestly, when he started last season and got to start playing, it looked really great. Obviously, he had an injury that kind of took him off the field a little bit as well. We're all really high on him here. We wanted to hear your put. Like, is he clear heads and shoulders you know, pun intended, because he's so tall, going to be that number one striker for you guys?
Yeah, 100%. He is the probably the most naturally talented striker. I mean, all-round technical game. I've seen it in James's Park in a black and white shirt, and I include Alan Shearer in that. Alan Shearer is a very good goal scorer. By the time he got Newcastle, he wasn't the player he had been when he was at Blackburn. I still compare him to Thierry Henry. Like, I think he's exactly like Henry. He will move over the left, he'll move over the right. But every time he gets it, I mean, you could see it on Saturday. I don't know how much of Saturday you saw, but you could see it every time he got the ball, Aston Villa defenders were petrified. Like, what's he going to do with it next? Because he did it to Everton last season, where he beat four players. He beat two of them twice. Like, he did a body swerve and beat three people. He's a fantastic footballer. £60 million is going to look like a steal for him in about 2 years, 3 years' time, because I think there'll be clubs saying, we'll pay £150 million, we'll pay £200 million for him. Newcastle haven't gone out and bought any superstar winner. We're not on the running for Neymar now. He's off to South. We're not looking to buy Mbappe or whatever. We've found young, hungry players who want to prove that they can play in the brackets best league in the world. Whatever other people want to call it, but to play in the Premier League. And Alexander Isak's a really good example of that. He was at Real Sociedad. He was at a club that's pretty similar to Newcastle, in that it had overachieved the previous season. Quite a small provincial club. Now all of a sudden, we're up in the big time. But other people came calling. We've gone and got him. And I think Callum Wilson's a very, very good and able deputy, but he's no Alexander Isak.
Yeah. Do you, and this is going to be a question that it's kind of just for you and myself, I would love to get the perspective over there as compared to here. I think that there is obviously the ownership being similar with City and Newcastle being foreign. The money going into those clubs is the headline now, the money that they have to spend. And in all honesty, I think that City and Newcastle have kind of done it the right way, where it's like Haaland excluded, and you could probably disagree too. But when you got Rodri, he wasn't the greatest center defensive mid in the world. When you guys were signing these players, we said when the money came in on this podcast, it's like, you're going to hear Mbappe going there. You're going to hear every person under the sun. And it seemed like there was a lot of restraint on your team's end to be like, no, we have a plan. We're going to sign these people. We're going to sign the right people. We're going to sign the right attitude. And you mentioned young and hungry. So here in the U.S., there's a lot of the talk about City and Newcastle now having all the money. And for some reason, Todd Boehly can spend $1.5 billion. And here, I think it's just because there's more Chelsea fans than anything else. It's not brought up as much. Over there, what is the perception of them spending all this money? And honestly, because you can look at your own club now over the past year and a half, 2 years, and I know it's not a huge sample size, but you've hit on a lot of transfers, and I can kind of do the same. What is that perception of how money spent for you all versus Todd Boehly, I guess, essentially?
So there's a bit of jealousy about it, in that opposition fans don't like the fact that we suddenly have all this money. Morally, for sure. I'll be brutally honest, I would prefer our football club not to be owned by Saudi Arabian funded. But do you know what? I didn't want Mike Ashley, and I didn't have enough money to get rid of him. So I certainly don't have enough money to get rid of these guys. The thing I would say is that, you know, we were talking about this last night, actually, in the podcast WhatsApp group, that, you know, when we were talking about things that we would talk about this week. So Chelsea have bought Enzo Fernandez for £105 million. Today, they've just completed Moises Caicedo for £100 million with £15 million in add-ons. And then apparently they're also going to sign Romeo Lavia for £60 million. So that is them spending, without any additional costs, £265 million. And if Caicedo's £15 million add-ons go on, £280 million on three central midfielders. We spent £40 million on Joe Linton, £60 million on Tonali, and £35 million on Bruno. So we spent £135 million on three central midfielders. They've spent a quarter of a billion on three central midfielders, but it's Newcastle United and spending money that's ruining football. I have a real problem with what Chelsea are doing, because to a certain extent, the Saudi League has basically bailed them out. They've bought 5 or 6 players off them. Now, can I realistically be angry that 4 PIF-owned clubs have helped Chelsea out? No, I can't, because PIF also have a stake in Clear Lake, which is Todd Bowley's partner in this. Mm-hmm. So they obviously are also going to help Chelsea out, because they stand to gain more money from their investment if Chelsea do well. I think I'm really happy with the fact that we haven't gone and bought a, in inverted commas, a superstar. I remember the day Man City's takeover happened, they bought Robinho for, I think it was 32 million from Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. And Robinho actually thought he was going to Chelsea, didn't realise he was going to Manchester City when the deal was done. And that was probably, that was the first iteration of Man City. And that was probably when they made some mistakes. And to be fair, I think our owners have probably learned from that. You know, they spent, I think it was £28 million on Roque Santa Cruz, didn't work out. They spent a lot of money on players, like Brazilian players and stuff who were coming over. And then suddenly they got this guy, Yaya Touré, and they're like, mm-hmm. this is what we do. We buy players who aren't quite there yet, but want to go to that next level. And that's what they've done. You know, I don't think many people could believe when Kevin De Bruyne went to Man City, I think it was for £58 million, but he'd only left Chelsea 2 years earlier for about £8 million or something. And people were like, oh, Man City's a ridiculous amount of money. Well, actually, now to buy Kevin De Bruyne, he'd need £120, £130 million. He's probably the best midfielder in the world. I think a bit like Manchester City fans, we have to take the flak that we've got loads of money. Yeah, we do have loads of money, but if we break the rules, we get kicked out of competitions. Juventus have just been kicked out of Europe for a year because they didn't adhere to the spending rules. Newcastle haven't gone and spent £700 million in one transfer window because they can't, because we don't have enough revenue. I think what will be interesting is obviously Chelsea have missed out on Europe this season. And if Chelsea miss out on Europe again next season, I don't see how they can continue to fund this situation. I don't think they will miss out on Europe next season. I think they'll probably be in the top eight. But I think if they did, then there'd be a serious situation to have. But I suppose for Manchester City, and looking at it from my perspective as a Newcastle fan, there's an element of jealousy in that they got the model right about 5 years before we were taken over. And it would be nice for us to have got that model at that time. But I mean, you know, they've got probably the best manager in the world, bar Eddie Howe. They've got an ownership team that's set up to deliver him exactly what he wants. And yeah, and it works well. You know, João Cancelo didn't want to work with Guardiola, right? You're off, you're peddled. Eddie Howe does use pretty much the same system. You know, or you're not prepared to do this, you're not prepared to, right, okay, well, you won't play for me then. You know, and he's a very, I think he's learned a lot from his time away out of it at Bournemouth. And I think a lot of people did him a disservice and didn't think his tactical or coaching acumen could go up to the next level. And I think they've been proved catastrophically wrong about the impact that he can have on a football club.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I think even now on our podcast, there's the aspect of, is the shoe going to drop with him? And are they going to try to find some Zidane style or some like bigger name that is not English and whatnot? But I think, again, with how they've spent money on players, we're probably all overthinking it, and they probably have their guy, and he's proven that he knows what he's doing. Before I get your prediction for the season, because I've asked every fan to do this, because I think it's going to be interesting to hear what everyone says. We've mentioned almost every name on the roster now. Who is, barring Tonali, because I think that's a given. I think we're both on the same page there, that it's just going to be so interesting to see him come to the Premier League and if it's going to work and if he's going to play well. And after the first game, we can kind of see that that's probably a yes. Who are you looking at to, if you had to have a fan come up to you and it's like, all right, like, give me some deep knowledge on who do I need to keep an eye on? Who do I need to pay attention to? And it might not be this year. It might be next year or whatever. Is there anyone on this roster that you want to give some insights to our listeners?
So I'll ignore the obvious people, because like Harvey Barnes, we've just signed him. I think he'll have a really good season. Anthony Gordon, we signed him in January. I think he'll have a really good season. Mm-hmm. Two people who people might not have heard of, unless they watched us in the States, and then they might have a bit of an idea of them. Two players I might not have heard that much about. The one is Elliot Anderson, who is Newcastle born and bred. He is the Geordie Maradona, as the song goes. really has had an outstanding preseason, has bulked up quite a bit, was on the cusp of the first team last time around, has the potential to be, Newcastle's kind of Phil Foden type. I think this will be a massive year for him. I think if you said to me, who do you think in 2 or 3 years' time we should be keeping an eye out for? I think it's Lewis Miley, who again got quite a lot of coverage in pre-season, but he's a much taller, more physical player who is very, or seems very calm and assured and very technically sound with the football. We've obviously signed two players who were highly sought after around the world, and we've loaned them out to Goran Kjol and Yankuba Minte. I think it's how you say his name, but I could have said that wrong. And he's gone to Feyenoord on loan this season. And I think those are players who are good. But if you wanted two names, I think you should have Elliot Anderson has the potential to play 10, 15, maybe 20 games this season. And I think he will be slowly brought through by Howe until you get to the stage where when you're asking me, oh, you know, Bruno can't play all these games. Well, it's all right because we've got Elliot and he can play those games and he can make things happen. And I think there's also an element of finding Anderson's best position within the squad, because naturally, as it does happen, players develop over time, and he looked like he was going to be a wide left player. Now he's kind of been one of the three in midfield. If we go to 4-2-3-1, does he become the number 10 behind Isak? So there's all that kind of, well, that's Eddie's job, it's not mine. But as a fan, you want to see local lads doing well. Sean Longstaff scoring both the goals against Southampton that sent us to Wembley, fantastic story. Dan Byrne playing at Wembley, fantastic story. But you want more of that, and I think those two players are really, really good. In defence, it'll be interesting to see what happens to Harrison Ashby this season. He's away, gone away on loan, but obviously Livramento has come in, and it'd be great to see him make a stake for a first team place. But I think probably Miley and Anderson are the two under the radar players who would be likely to kick on following preseason.
Love it, and with more games this season, it'd be great for him to step in there for you all, so you don't have to go try to find someone else and have it be a homegrown person. I take a lot of pride in Phil Foden. I was one of the people that 2 years ago, when he was in and then out and then in and then out, his forward play, his forward movement, I just sat there and I was like, I just need him to play. Pep, just play him, just play him. So I'm hoping for you until you play City, but I'm hoping for you. this guy is that guy for you. All right. We've gone over the roster. We've talked about some strengths and weaknesses, what you're excited about. Where do you see this team finishing in the Premier League? And then I'll give you an out, because I think predicting anything that has to do with the Champions League is really difficult. But what would you be satisfied with in the first foray back in that competition?
Okay, so if you'd asked me when we originally emailed each other, John, like so what, a week and a half ago, if you'd asked me then, where did I think we'd finish? I think I probably would have said fifth. I think we would sneak into the Champions League through this new system that allows the teams with the highest coefficients to get back in. Yep. Having watched pretty much everyone, I'm not watching Manchester United Wolves now, but I've watched pretty much everybody else so far. I'm going to say we're going to finish third. We're going to be the third best team in the country. We're going to finish behind Manchester City and probably Arsenal. But I think we're going to finish third. Liverpool spent a long time focusing on their midfield and changing around their midfield. They've spent no time on their defence and actually sorting that out. And that's a knock-on effect for them, because they're now starting to see gaps appearing where the midfielders and the defenders don't really know what each other's doing. Manchester United, I'm not convinced by this guy they spent £70 million on. I think he scored 9 goals in Serie A last season. I'm just not convinced by him. Maybe he scores 20 goals and he makes me look stupid, but I'm not convinced he's the hero that they're looking for. We're not in Man City's stratosphere. It'd be great to maybe bloody their nose a couple of times in a season and give them a bit of a shock like we did last season when we're 3-1 up, and then Haaland decided to turn on off the boosters and get you back into the game. So I don't think we're in their stratosphere. I don't think we're up there. I think we could challenge Arsenal for second. But I also think, you know, I also don't think Tottenham are going to be any, like, people seem to think that Tottenham are just going to bounce it back. I don't think so. A lot of people had Aston Villa as a surprise package, where we've just sent them home, kind of tails between their legs, haven't been given a hiding by us.
Yeah, you guys actually shocked everyone on this podcast because we had you in the top four, top five on each person's predictions, but Villa was like our darling pick of like they're going to be pretty good. And I think that's the game that I had to go watch the replay of because I wasn't able to watch it live. And I just looked at the score and I was like, I don't know anything about football, about soccer anymore. Because I was like, what is this? Yeah. So top three, I will say the Arsenal game for you two, for Newcastle Arsenal, will be interesting. I think that we've all kind of said on this pod that they are in, I mean, they had a great season last year, but if they scale back a little bit, if they fall back a little bit, I'm not shocked at all. And again, going and watching games last year, there's two teams that when City lined up against them, I was like, we could lose this one. And it wasn't Arsenal. It was Liverpool just because it's been that rivalry for the past 4 years. And obviously my brother's a Liverpool fan, so I just have that built in. And it was watching you guys. I think that there's just an edge to this team that I think we would describe it here in the U.S. You've mentioned the NBA a few times. It's a little bit Memphis-y. There's a lot of grit. There's a lot of grit and a lot of grind. And I think that you all actually probably love that's the comparison, because I think that's kind of the personality that you want the team to take.
Odd. I would say that in a heartbeat. I mean, we don't have a gun swinging point guard to like to do the same analysis with. But I would say probably what we do have is we have an element of no one's Dylan Brooks. Like everybody's playing hard, everybody's playing fair, but there isn't a Dylan Brooks in there who's throwing shots out at people. And I mean, Jacob Murphy's become like a bit of an online sensation for some of his funny things, like his waves at the Southampton player when he got sent off and stuff like that. But nobody's out there, you know, disrespecting the opposition, saying, oh, you're not good enough to play against us. You know, we understand that we're there to be shot at now. We were the underdog. Everybody thought, nah, Newcastle won't keep us up. Now it's Newcastle will keep us up. So now we have to make sure that we go and beat them. And I think, if I'm honest, the thing that I was quite surprised by is we physically are quite a dominant team now. Yeah. You know, we are grinders, and we're in your face. And Eddie Howe loves the phrase, intensity is our identity. Well, you know, Erik ten Hag called it out before the 2-0 game in the league when he said, they slow the game down, they like to kick the ball out, et cetera, et cetera. Howe called him out and said, right, if you want a fast-paced game, go on and we'll go toe-to-toe for you. And we beat them 2-0. I have a feeling, and it's just a feeling, I have a feeling that we'll improve this year just by continuing to have this idea that, right, we're going to constantly regenerate and constantly regenerate and constantly regenerate. And also the leadership group in Trippier won't allow anyone to kind of fall back in it. As to your Champions League question, what would be success in the Champions League? Getting out the group would be fantastic. I think it'll depend on who we get, if I'm honest. Because if we were to get Real Madrid and Bayern Munich and put one on top, okay, well, let's see if we can finish third and get in the Europa. I'll probably want one glamour tie, but I would love to do somewhere like Dortmund or Leipzig or, you know, a team that we've never played before, that we've never had the opportunity to play against and get that opportunity to play against teams who finish in similar positions but in other leagues to test, like, oh, well, where do we rank amongst those guys? And if we could get to the last 16, I think that would be a massive achievement to be a knockout European football, because then I think you can beat anybody. I think on your day, you can't beat anybody. I mean, Manchester City, I think going in that Real Madrid game, everyone was like, oh, they've done this before, they've been in this position before, and then they've fluffed their lines, etc., etc. But they blew Real Madrid away. I mean, like, they just they were like, okay, we hear the hype. We're gonna make sure we win. And I think, I'm not saying I think we'd win it, because I don't think we would win it, but if we ended up in the quarterfinals, I would be perfectly happy with that. If we got in the last 16, I'd be pretty happy with that in the first season back. What I don't want us to do is to risk not getting back there by putting extra pressure on us to say, oh, we must get the quarterfinals of the Champions League, so we need to rest players for league games. No. Like, it's most important that we're back there year after year after year, and you do that through your league situation.
For sure.
And I suppose, to a certain extent, I'm going to use another NBA example. Apologies to people who don't like the NBA, because you're going to think, who's this Geordie coming on here to talk about it? But I feel like we're a bit like, we're going to be a bit like Milwaukee in that they kept banging on the door. Yeah. Then they got there. And then now they haven't banged on the door again. And people are going like, oh, it's a failure. It's a failure. It's not, because we did what no other team did that year. We went and won it. And I liked Antetokounmpo saying, at the end of the season, it's not a failure. It's just we didn't achieve some of the things that we wanted to do. You know, we played well, we just didn't get to where we wanted to get to. And I think that's probably quite important for Newcastle fans to remember, because expectations are massively raised this year because of how well we did last year. And, you know, if Man City finished second, there'd be some Manchester City fans going, this is it, like Guardiola's got to go, or whatever. You know, if we get to the stage where we're fourth or fifth, and we haven't moved on, but we've stayed where we need to be, I think there has to be an acceptance that will be a good season. But having said that, I was told, you know, you're going to struggle against Aston Villa. Well, we didn't. Yeah. And if we were to go to the Etihad and get a draw, or, God forbid, win there for the first time in the league, if we were to do that, then we would have to start taking a seriously as, oh, hold on, like, this is not a team that's just going to plateau and be happy with one season in the Champions League and finishing sixth. Next year, they're really going to want to kick on. So, yeah. So, I think it's really important. But it more than anything, what any Newcastle fan wants is to win the side, win one trophy. My granddad died just before one of the League Cup games last year, and he was 92. Mm-hmm. We last won the league 3 years before he was born. So, like, wow. You know, my dad's seen us win one trophy in his lifetime, and he's, like, in his 60s now. So, it is about... And Newcastle fans, is about winning something, but it's also about getting to a stage where we can rely on, right, we're going to be in the top four, we're going to be in the top five for repeat, and then we can have regular Champions League conversations, and then I can come back on here and say to you, well, we've not Man City off the perch, haven't we? But it's about getting to that stage, and we're not there yet. I don't think anyone's under any illusions that we are there yet, but it's nice to have the excitement of thinking we could be there one day.
Yeah. It's your description is great, especially for our audience, just because we have to put the American lens on it. We're American on this pod, and it makes it easier for some people to understand. They will get the NBA references, gun-toting point guards only in America, obviously. But also only in America is fans that are, you know, new to the league, new to becoming fans of football, becoming fans of soccer here. And you've been on here for an hour, and I thank you so much for your time. Before I let you plug, you know, the True Faith podcast and get you on your way, because it's late there. If you had to talk to a U.S. fan, and I'll let you know, the bar right by me here in Brooklyn is a Newcastle bar, and the bartender there is from Newcastle. She's an amazing woman. And there's people that walk in there and ask her questions, and she has a pitch. But if you had to give people just a quick couple of words of like, hey, if you're looking for a team, this is it. What would it be?
I suppose the thing I would say is, if you're looking for a team that is coming from or about to go on a really, really big journey, and you want to be there at the start of that journey, Newcastle United is the club to follow. If you want to be part of a community whereby you can be 5,000 miles away, you can be 10,000, you can be in Australia, but you want a sense of belonging and a sense of culture that doesn't come with, oh, you only support this team because they're winning. Newcastle United is that team. And fortunately, if you follow them now, you're probably going to see more winning than losing. But at the same time, probably the big part about it is, the big thing that I have is, the club has a sense of belonging. It has an identity. It is not a corporate behemoth that is trying to take over everything around us. It's not. It still plays at the same ground it's played at since 1892. It has a real homely feel. It used to be successful years ago. It's not anymore. But the hope is that it will be again. And the idea of being part of watching a natural evolution towards a team becoming a powerhouse in English football should be a real draw for every fan, regardless of where they're from. And, you know, I know, because I saw the pictures of how many Newcastle fans were out in Philadelphia, were out in Atlanta, were in New York, were in Brooklyn and stuff for the games. You know, Newcastle United is a big club. It's not Manchester United. It's not Manchester City. It's not. And if you want to be one of the 4 billion people or whatever it is at Man United claim to have as their supporters, then that's fine. You'll probably see your team, well, you'll never see them be as successful as they were 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But you might see them be successful. If you want to be a Man City fan, good. Go on. You'll probably win the league quite a lot and you'll probably enjoy it quite a bit, but there'll be an element of it that you'll always have to look in the back of your mind about the FFP charges and things like that. With Newcastle, what you get is an experience of a team that is, and I can't promise that they're going to get everything right because they're not. And like you said before, they've hit a lot of transfers. We've been very lucky so far that every single transfer we've made has worked out under the new regime. But I tell you what, it would be fantastic to be coming in at the ground stage of a team that could be about to hit a real liftoff. And even when we're bad, it's still funny. So there's a lot of gallows humour around it. So even when you get beaten, like, there's a bit of laughter about it and a bit like, oh, I could read that rubbish. And yeah, it affects you on a Monday and a Tuesday, but by Wednesday, you're like, ah, it's all right, we'll just go and beat whoever we've got next week. So yeah, it's about that. And I suppose it's about that one club city. You know, Manchester has two clubs. Birmingham has about 4, London has about 7. But Newcastle is the pride of the North, and we're the most northerly Premier League team. We have been for quite a while. We're probably likely to be for quite a while longer. But it's a fantastic feeling being part of something that you feel like you're representing a community that is kind of a little bit forgotten about from those people down in London who think that we're still working down pits and drinking Newcastle brown ale and that's all we ever do. So, yeah.
Love it. Stephen Norton, thank you so much for jumping on, talking with me, keeping with us, even though we had some tech difficulties. I know it's late in your time. Can you please tell our listeners as well, before you go, about the True Faith Newcastle pod? How often do you pod? Where can they listen to you? How can they follow?
So True Faith has been going for over 10 years now as a podcast, about 10 years actually as a podcast. And you can find us on Patreon, where for £8 a month, you get up to 40 podcasts a month from various different people. And it's all about Newcastle United. So apologies if you're interested in any other team, because you probably won't like it then, because it is all Newcastle United. Apart from when we play other teams and then we tell them why they're rubbish. The podcast has been going for quite a long time. There's a website attached to it as well. So if you enjoy reading about what Premier League fans think about something, the True Faith website is out there as well. True Faith Newcastle United, just to put that on the Google, it comes up. But we're available on Apple. We're available on Spotify. We do a free podcast after every single game. So even if you just want to download the free one, it's normally about 45, 50 minutes, just talking about the previous week's game and then building up towards the game that's coming. And it's normally just 3 or 4 big points that we can take away from it as people who've been at the game. The free podcasts are only done by people who've actually been at the game. So it won't be done by someone who wasn't there. It would be done by people who were at the game. But it's a fantastic community to be part of. And I'm sure, just like you guys, you've got a lot of subscribers that you're really happy and content like with. And, you know, it's just great that other people want to listen to you talk about football, because there's quite a lot of my mates who don't want to hear me talk about football. So it's quite good that there's a lot of people out there who do want to hear us talk about football, which is fantastic.
Trust me, there's more friends that don't than do, but that's fine. I'm converting them as quick as I can. Stephen, thank you so much. Thank you for spending an hour with us. And I know it's late there, and would love to have you back on when City and Newcastle are battling it out for the title this year.
Definitely. Cheers, John. Thanks very much.
NAFTA podcast.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.